Hello and welcome to another episode of Trash or Treasure, the podcast where Kim
and Amy
bring you spoiler-free recaps, reviews, and recommendations for whatever we read this week. And this week, we are doing our reading quietly, separately, and in isolation because we are both sick. So,
yay.
Apologies. We are having to do this on Zoom.
We seem
which is a throwback to
2 years ago.
Many, many moons ago.
We seem to have transferred sickness to each other recording the last episode of the podcast. Fun times.
We did. And we say to each other when really we mean Amy made Kim sick. At any rate, this week, Amy, as you are in charge, what did we read?
We read One for the Money by Janet Ivanovich, but we're going to talk about the whole Stephanie Plum series because we have read those others as well. So we reread One for the Money.
Okay, cool. So for something new and different, would you like to do the spoiler-free recap?
Yes, I will try. The general premise of One for the Money is that the main character, Stephanie Plum, who is the first person narrator of the book, is a bounty hunter. So it's her job to sort of chase after people who failed to appear at their court hearing.
But she wasn't at the start of the book.
No. One for the Money begins. She's been let go from her not really amazing job selling lingerie at some like local department store. Her car's been repossessed. She's never really ahead of it in terms of the rent. She's having a bum lunch at her parents' house. So things aren't great. So things aren't great. It's a bit dire. Her mum's heard on the sort of local grapevine that there's a job going in her cousin's Vinny's bond agency. And that's how she becomes a bounty hunter, bond enforcement agent without any form of skills.
Yeah.
It's set in Trenton, New Jersey. And Stephanie's family is a sort of couple generations in Mediterranean immigrant, Italian-American, Hungarian-American sort of tight-knit community that's everyone's grandma knows everyone's grandma. So she learns a lot of her.
It's a little bit small town in that way.
She lives in this area called The Berg. Well, her family does. And so what she lacks in skills, she makes up in gossipy relatives and the learnings of the Berg.
Connections.
Yeah. So One for the Money, she needs to make some significant amount of money. So she wheedles Vinny into giving her the highest value bond. What do I call this? Like the highest value person to go after, the one where she'll get the most money from handing him
in? I think they're called a bounty.
Sure. So she
I think the person is called a bounty.
She gets like 10% of the overall bounty. And this one is she'll get $10,000 if she gets this guy. And this guy is Joe Morelli, who is a police officer who is essentially he's failed to appear on a charge of murdering someone. So she's like, I'm going after him. But twist, exciting. It's not a spoiler because it's very clear in like chapter one of the book. Stephanie's got a past with Joe Morelli, quite a intimate and exciting past. They've got history. It means it's going to be a very exciting hunt. Shenanigans will ensue. Yeah,
speed this along, babe.
So Stephanie is obviously not trained. So she gets a bit of help from the only really competent bond agent that Vinny uses, whose name is Ranger. He's this like ex-special forces sort of Superman guy who tries to help turn her into a legitimate and skilled bounty hunter.
Mostly because he doesn't want her to get killed in the process.
Yeah. So there's a sort of like romantic tension between her and him, and there's a sort of romantic tension between her and Morelli, who she's chasing. There's some fun supporting characters. Grandma Mazur, who's Stephanie's ancient gossipy grandma, Connie, who runs the bond enforcement agency, and Stephanie meets a whole bunch of interesting characters along the way as well, who sort of contribute in some way, shape or form. There's also a sort of overarching menace. I'm not really going to talk about that because that becomes part of, I guess, the overall mystery. So I call it like a comedy mystery thriller. She's sort of sassy. Everyone's fast talking. There's little screwball moments of comedy that happen. But the mystery in this one is it is quite dark, the stuff that happens in this book.
Very much so.
But I wouldn't say that that is the darkness is the overall tone for the Stephanie Plum series. They become farcical romantic comedies with a bit of mystery thrown in as the series is continue. Okay, my brain's given out on me, so I'm going to now throw to you to do the what are your thoughts part that you do first. What do you think about One for the Money, and then what are your thoughts on that sort of overall Plum series?
So I really enjoy One for the Money. I have reread it a bunch of times, so this wasn't even my first reread. And I like it because the mystery is plausible and interesting and intriguing. It's got kind of like the exact kind of New Jersey feel that you would, as a person who's never lived in or been to New Jersey, that I would kind of expect, you know, kind of almost gangstery, like Morelli's involved, like what's going on with Morelli and why has he been accused of murder and did he do it? If not, what's going on with him and blah, 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 blah. They haven't been an item for a really long time. I think she like lost her virginity to him at 16 or something, and they haven't
never were an item.
That's it was just like a thing. I really liked him in this and I really liked her. She's independent and really making her own way, and it's a bit of a struggle, but it's kind of a relatable struggle. I really like her crazy family and I really enjoy the cast of supporting characters. Everyone seems, if at times a little bit heightened and a little bit caricature-y, I didn't find it abrasive. Like I enjoyed it and enjoyed the kind of heightened craziness of it. It does, about the third act, take like a bit of a turn that's dark. So for me, it felt a bit realistic in that sense too, because ultimately she is getting mixed up in pretty serious crime, like pretty serious conspiracies. And it's not really like the movies. Like if you're involved in some crazy conspiracy, chances are someone's just going to kill you. Like that's kind of where it's going to go. So it is like, it does become quite dangerous for her, which I felt raised the stakes at the right point in the narrative for it not to just be frivolous and silly and caricature-y. So I think the part where it raises the stakes made it rereadable for me rather than disposable. And the way it does that is, I think, like for me, it was really organic and it made sense. And I wanted, like it was the sort of twist in the plot. And it's not really a plot twist. It's just kind of a change of gears that I didn't even know I needed until it happened. And then upon reread, I'm like, this is why I reread the book, because it gets so much more meaningful right when you need it to. So yeah, One for the Money. Absolutely love it. Love, love, love. Don't watch the movie. The movie was horrendous.
The movie didn't capture the tone of the book at all. Like
not at all.
It's like, I would say the book, when it has that turn, is probably like a, you know, mature rating. Because of the darkness. It's not just.
Whereas they kind of cut that. Yeah. They really cut that and made it a rom-com in the film. But I would say from a series point of view, and I know because we have been reading these books since they were contemporary. So it's set in contemporary times, but now.
'90s. They started when we were in primary school. We started reading them in the early 2000s.
But my point is it was closer, like it was much closer when we started reading them than now. Like it didn't feel like forever ago, whereas now it feels like it was set in the era of Stranger Things. Like it feels very retro to me now, but when we were reading them, it didn't feel like it was that long ago. I think I really enjoyed, and I know, so because we read them so long ago, this is my point, I lost my train of thought, sorry. Because we had read them so long ago, I know that you agree with this because we've talked about these 1,000 times. I really enjoy for me, it's the first 10. I yeah. really thoroughly enjoyed the first 10 novels in the series.
Yeah.
And I read probably until 14. And after that, I stopped. The main thing for me, so pretty much these become, in the beginning, they're very much crime procedural kind of mystery, a little bit bumbling, a little bit kind of luck, a little bit weird small town. Like, it's kind of a really interesting mix. But as it goes along and she becomes a little bit more competent, the books become very much a will she or won't she between Ranger and Joe Morelli. And I just hated it. I just felt like by the time you get deep into the series, that becomes the central driving force of so many of the plot arcs that I just don't care. Like, I don't mm-hmm. care who she gets with. Also, once you've flip-flopped side to side so many times over so many years, by the time you're 10 books in, it's not monthly. These aren't set a month apart. So a lot of time has passed. Make up your freaking mind, Stephanie Plum, or make up your mind to choose neither of them. But this is getting unrealistic and farcical. And so, yeah, that will they or won't they actually got distracting for me to the point where I was just done with them.
There's actually 28 of them at the moment, I think.
There's so many. And because I think the more they went on, it felt like Jenna Ivanovich really leaned into that as it's kind of, this is why readers keep coming back. I felt like the other plots were no longer as good as they used to be. So have we reviewed Night and Moon?
Yes, we have.
Curious Minds. Yeah. And I have found myself much more engaged and prepared to pick up those Janet Ivanoviches that are the beginnings of new series. And I just, by about book 10, I was wishing she would just wrap up Stephanie Plum and move on to some new material because it just was getting, and even in that first 10, like, they're not all gems. Some of them are better than others. But after that, I was just like, and this is finished for me now. So yeah, but One for the Money on its own in isolation, I reread a lot. I really, it's still, I would, for me, remains my favorite of the series.
It could potentially stand alone. Like,
I think it totally stands alone.
You don't really.
If you don't care very hard, if you know what, if you take our advice, which is this, if you have a friend in the guise of Kim and Amy who can say to you now, you never find out if she's Team Morelli or Team Ranger, it's never resolved, then you don't need to read past the first book. Like, there are really nice stories and side characters and other things that happen. But in terms of like a driver that makes you read a series because of a series arc, the series arc that she's tried to establish is this, who is she going to end up with? But because I guess she just never wanted to resolve it, it never gets resolved. It just becomes this irritating kind of part of the series.
So you would recommend the first book?
No, I would recommend a smattering. I haven't reread all of them in a long time, so I would have trouble being like these specific ones.
Okay, but I can help with
One for the Money. One for the Money for sure. The first three were terrific. I really enjoyed the first three. Okay. I would love to hear from someone who is up to date and is like, I've read all 28. Maybe you can prove me wrong. Please send us an email or a tweet if you are sitting listening now and being like, oh, no, she and Morelli got married in 16. Like, I don't know.
I'd love to.
I didn't read it.
Yeah.
Amy, what are your thoughts?
I really enjoyed One for the Money. I remember my initial read of it was I just had to keep going. It really is a page turner because the mystery and the central plot is really good.
Yeah.
Really. And there was a very gripping, growing sense of like threat and menace and complexity in the novel as you kept reading. But it also had lots of moments where you could relieve a little bit of tension by having a laugh, which made for a really engrossing and a very rereadable and satisfying novel. I really liked how would I describe this? Like, within the book, there's some really nice sort of character growth and character development from the central group of people in it that at the beginning, the Stephanie you meet is not the Stephanie at the end because she's grown as a person.
Yeah, absolutely.
But that bit was missing from a lot of the later novels. The Stephanie at the end of the book is the same Stephanie at the beginning of the book. And you said before that as she becomes a bit more competent, but I sort of felt that she really didn't become more competent. She plateaus. She reaches this point where she just keeps making the same stupid mistakes. Like, how many times does she end up in a dumpster digging something out? So, like you, I haven't progressed through all the books. I stopped reading at 11. I'll reread up to 11, but I'm very selective because there are some where the mystery is just weak or isn't as strong as in others. So I like 1. I like 3. 2 was okay. I don't reread that as much. I like 4, 5, 9, and 11 are my favorite ones. And then I remember reading, I think it was number 14, and being like, I don't really know what happened in that. There wasn't really a clear sense of page turning threat or menace that I remembered being so interesting in that first book. So I totally reinforce the things that you've said. There's only so much you can spin out the will they or won't they plot line, really. And I think this one has been flogged to death. And Janet Ivanovich, I'd really like you to just write a 3rd, 4th, 5th book for the Night and Moon series, please, and stop putting all your energies into the Plum Factory. But I would recommend I would recommend One for the Money. I think it's a good, strong, well-constructed book.
Yay!
It's not, if you've picked up a later Stephanie Plum, One for the Money is not the same tone. So it is genuinely much darker. Like, you did call it a crime procedural or something, and that's sort of what it is. And there are some sort of, there are some bits that are thematically quite hard hitting in it that aren't present in a lot of the other books. But I think that that adds to the well craftedness of that book. This is not my best word episode.
I think that this was a book that took her a lot longer to write. I always felt like One for the Money, on reading it, feels like a lot more thought went into it than other books, which is why
it's longer.
The others tend to be a little bit more popcorn-y. Yeah, absolutely. And the plot is just better crafted. Yeah, this One for the Money is the book she wanted to write about Stephanie Plum, for sure. And then there were just other things she could write about, so she did, and now it's just an insane moneymaker, so that's the end of that. But, yeah, I think One for the Money is just by far the best in the series. Like,
yeah, it started really strong and it never really got back up to that height.
But One for the Money was so good that I read 10 other books that were okay, waiting for it to be that good again. That's how good I found One for the Money.
Okay, so while we would treasure One for the Money, we don't treasure the series. Is that our verdict?
Yep.
We're aligned?
I think so.
Yep, okay. Excellent.
Well, that's it. I feel like maybe not our most concise podcast episode ever, but
I think
we're ill and we're doing the best we can.
Yeah, we pushed through. I think I've used words that are real.
I think we're clear. I think it's fine. I choose to believe in us. At any rate, tune in next week when we will be much more healthful and therefore making of the sense. Woo. And we will bring you more spoiler-free recaps, reviews, and recommendations for whatever we read that week. And until then, happy reading!
And healthy reading!
And just a quick reminder here at the end of the podcast that we would love to hear from you. We want your recommendations, the good, the bad, the interesting, doesn't matter. Please reach out, send us an email at trashortreasurepodcast@outlook.com. Or we are also available at the world's most awkward Twitter handle, which Amy has to tell you about. Listen to our Twitter handle. It's the greatest.
It's @_treasure.
Doesn't that just roll off the tongue?
And with those encouraging words, tweet or email us.
We love to hear from you. Happy reading.
Cheers.